Chapter 29 The Herdsman. For most of the morning we walked through the cane, meeting no one. Jolenta grew neither stronger nor weaker, so far as I could judge. But it seemed to me that hunger, and the fatigue of supporting her and the pitiless glare of the sun, were telling upon me, for twice or thrice, when I glimpsed her from the corner of my eye, it seemed that I was not seeing Jolenta at all, but someone else, a woman I recalled but could not identify. If I turned my head to look at her, this impression, which was always very slight, vanished altogether. So we walked, talking little. It was the only time since I had received her from Master Palaemon that Terminus Est seemed burdensome to me. My shoulder grew raw under the baldric. I cut cane for us, and we chewed it for the sweet juice. Jolenta was always thirsty, and since she could not walk unless we aided her, and could not hold her stalk of cane when we did, we were forced to stop often. It was strange to see those long legs, so beautifully molded, with their slender ankles and ripe thighs, so useless. In a day we reached the end of the cane and emerged onto the edge of the true pampa, the sea of grass. Yet there were still a few trees, though they were so widely scattered that each was in sight of no more than two or three others. To each of these trees, the body of some beast of prey was lashed with rawhide, its forepaws outspread like arms. They were mostly the spotted tigers, common in that part of the country. But I saw troches, too, with hair like man's, and sword-toothed smilodons. Most were hardly more than bones, but some lived and made those sounds that, as the people believe, served to frighten other tigers, atrocious and smilodons, which, if they were not so frightened, would prey upon the cattle. These cattle represented a far greater danger to us than the cats did. The herd bulls will charge anything that comes near them, and we were forced to give each herd we came across as much room as would prevent their short-sighted eyes from seeing us, and to move downwind of each. On these occasions, I was forced to let Dorcas prop Jolenta's weight as best she could, so I could walk ahead of them and somewhat nearer the animals. Once I had to leap aside and strike off the head of a bull as it charged. We built a fire of dry grass and roasted some of the meat. The next time I recalled the claw and the way in which it had ended the attack of the man-apes. I drew it out, and the fierce black bull trotted to me and nuzzled my hand. We put Jolenta on his back with Dorcas to hold her on, and I walked beside his head, holding the gem where he could see its blue light. A living smilodon was bound to the next tree we reached, which was nearly the last we saw, and I was afraid he would frighten the bull. Yet when we passed him, I seemed to feel his eyes upon my back, yellow eyes as large as pigeons' eggs. My own tongue was swollen with his thirst. I gave Dorcas the gem to hold and went back and cut him down, thinking all the while that he would surely attack me. He fell to the ground, too weak to stand, and I, who had no water to give him, could only walk away. A little after noon, I noticed a carrion bird circling high above us. It is said they smell death, and I remembered that once or twice, when the journeymen were very busy in the examination room, it was necessary for us apprentices to turn out to throw stones at those who settled on the ruined curtain wall, lest they give the citadel a reputation more evil than it already possessed. The thought that Jolenta might die was repugnant to me, and I would have given much for a bow, so that I might perhaps pick the bird out of the air. But I had nothing of the kind and could only wish. After an interminable time, this first bird was joined by two much smaller ones, and from their bright head color, occasionally visible even from so far below, I knew them to be Cathartidae. Thus the first, whose wings had three times the spread of theirs, was a mountain teratornis, the breed that is said to attack climbers, raking their faces with poisoned talons and striking them with the elbows of its great pinions until they fall to their deaths. From time to time, the other two approached it too closely, and it turned upon them. When that occurred, we sometimes heard a shrill cry come drifting down from the ramparts of their castle of air. Once, in a macabre mood, I gestured for the birds to join us. All three dove, and I brandished my sword at them and gestured no more. When the western horizon had climbed nearly to the sun, we reached a low house, scarcely more than a hut, built of turf. A wiry man in leather leggings sat on a bench before it, drinking mate and pretending to watch the colors in the clouds. In truth, he must have seen us long before we saw him, for he was small and brown and blended well with his small brown home, while we had been silhouetted against the sky. I thrust away the claw when I saw this herdsman, though I was not certain what the bull would do when it was no longer in his sight. In the event, he did nothing, plodding ahead with the two women on his back as before. When we reached the sod house, I lifted them down, and he raised his muzzle and sniffed the wind, then looked at me from one eye. I waved toward the undulating grass, both to show him I had no more need of him and to let him see that my hand was empty. He wheeled and trotted away. The herdsman took his pewter straw from between his lips. "That was an ox," he said. I nodded. "We needed him to carry this poor woman who was ill, and so we borrowed him. Is he yours? We hoped you wouldn't mind, and after all, we did him no harm." "No, no." The herdsman made a vaguely deprecating gesture. "I only asked because when I first saw you, I thought he was a destrier. My eyes are not as good as they once were." He told us how good they once were, which was very good indeed. "But as you say, it was an ox." This time, Dorcas and I nodded together. "You see what it is to become old? I would have licked the blade of this knife." He slapped the metal hilt that protruded above his broad belt and pointed it to the sun to swear that I saw something between the ox's legs. "But if I were not such a fool, I would know that no one can ride the bulls of the pampas. The red panther does it, but then he holds on with his claws, and sometimes he dies even so. No doubt it was an udder the ox inherited from his mother. I knew her, and she had one." I said I was a city man and very ignorant of everything that concerned cattle. "Ah," he said, and sucked his mate. "I am a man more ignorant than you. Everyone around here but me is one ignorant eclectic. You know these people they call eclectics? They don't know anything. How can a man learn with neighbors like that?"
Dorcas said, "Please, won't you let us take this woman inside where she can lie down? I am afraid she's dying."
"I told you I don't know nothing. You should ask this man here. He can lead an ox. I almost said a bull, like a dog."
"But he can't help her. Only you can."
The herdsman cocked an eye at me, and I understood that he had established to his own satisfaction that it was I, and not Dorcas, who had tamed the bull.
"I'm very sorry for your friend," he said, "who I can see must have been a lovely woman once. But even though I've been sitting here cracking jokes with you, I have a friend of my own, and right now he's lying inside. You're afraid your friend is dying. I know mine is, and I'd like to let him go with no one to bother him."
We understand, and we won't disturb him. We may even be able to help him.
The herdsman looked from Dorcas to me and back again.
You are a strange people. What do I know? No more than one of those ignorant eclectics. Come in, then. But be quiet and remember you're my guests.
He rose and opened the door, which was so low I had to stoop to get through it. A single room constituted the house, and it was dark and smelled of smoke. A man, much younger and, I thought, much taller than our host, lay on a pallet before the fire. He had the same brown skin, but there was no blood beneath the pigment. His cheeks and forehead must have been smeared with dirt. There was no bedding beyond that on which the sick man lay. But we spread Dorcas's ragged blanket on the earthen floor and laid Jolenta on it. For a moment her eyes opened. There was no consciousness in them, and their once clear green had faded like shoddy cloth left in the sun. Our host shook his head and whispered,
"She won't last longer than that ignorant, eclectic Manan. Maybe not as long."
"She needs water," Dorcas told him.
"In back? In the catch barrel?" "I'll get it."
When I heard the door shut behind him, I drew out the claw. This time it flashed with such searing cyaneous flame that I feared it would penetrate the walls. The young man who lay on the pallet breathed deeply, then released his breath with a sigh. I put the claw away again at once.
"It hasn't helped her," Dorcas said.
"Perhaps the water will. She's lost a great deal of blood." Dorcas reached down to smooth Jolenta's hair. It must have been falling out, as the hair of old women and of people who suffer high fevers often does. So much clung to Dorcas's damp palm that I could see it plainly despite the dimness of the light.
"I think she's always been ill," Dorcas whispered, "ever since I've known her. Dr. Talos gave her something that made her better for a time, but now he has driven her away. She used to be very demanding, and he has had his revenge."
I can't believe he meant it to be as severe as this.
Neither can I, really. Severian, listen. He and Baldanders will surely stop to perform and spy out the land. We might be able to find them.
To spy? I must have looked as surprised as I felt.
At least it always seemed to me that they wandered as much to discover what passed in the world as to get money. And once, Dr. Talos as much as admitted that to me, though I never learned just what they were looking for.
The herdsman came in with a gourd of water. I lifted Jolenta to a sitting position, and Dorcas held it to her lips. It spilled and soaked Jolenta's tattered shift, but some of it went down her throat as well. And when the gourd was empty and the herdsman filled it again, she was able to swallow. I asked him if he knew where Lake Diaturna lay.
"I am only an ignorant man," he said. "I have never ridden so far. I have been told that way," pointing, "to the north and the west. Do you wish to go there?"
I nodded.
"You must pass through a bad place, then. Perhaps through many bad places, but surely through the Stone Town."
"There is a city near here, then?"
"There is a city, yes, but no people. The ignorant eclectics who live near there believe that no matter which way a man goes, the Stone Town moves itself to wait in his path."
The herdsman laughed softly, then sobered.
"That is not so. But the Stone Town bends the way a man's mount walks. So he finds it before him when he thinks he will go around it. You understand?" "I think you do not."
I remembered the botanic gardens and nodded. "I understand. Go on."
But if you are going north and west, you must pass through the stone town anyway. It will not even have to bend the way you walk. Some find nothing there but the fallen walls. I have heard that some find treasures. Some come back with fresh stories, and some do not come back. Neither of these women are virgins, I think.
Dorcas gasped. I shook my head.
That is well. It is they who most often do not return. Try to pass through by day, with the sun over the right shoulder by morning, and later in the left eye. If night comes, do not stop or turn to one side. Keep the stars of the Iwaivulu before you when they first grow bright.
I nodded, and I was about to ask for further information, when the sick man opened his eyes and sat up. His blanket fell away, and I saw there was a blood-stained bandage over his chest. He started, stared at me, and shouted something. Instantly, I felt the cold blade of the herdsman's knife at my throat.
"He won't harm you," he told the sick man.
He used the same dialect, but because he spoke more slowly, I was able to understand him.
"I don't believe he knows who you are."
"I tell you, Father, it is the new lictor of Thrax. They have sent for one, and the Clavagers say he's coming. Kill him. He'll kill all of them who haven't died already."
I was astounded to hear him mention Thrax, which was still so far away, and wanted to question him about it. I believe I could have talked to him and his father and made some sort of peace. But Dorcas struck the older man on the ear with the gourd. A futile woman's blow that did nothing more than smash the gourd and cause little pain. He slashed at her with his crooked two-edged knife, but I caught his arm and broke it, then broke the knife too under the heel of my boot. His son Manan tried to rise, but if the claw had restored his life, it had at least not made him strong. And Dorcas pushed him down on his pallet again.
"We will starve,"
the herdsman said.
His brown face was twisted by the effort he made not to cry out.
"You cared for your son," I told him. "Soon he will be well enough to care for you." "What was it he did?" Neither man would tell. I set the bone and splinted it. And Dorcas and I ate and slept outside that night, after telling father and son that we would kill them if we so much as heard the door open, or if any harm was done Jolenta. In the morning, while they were still asleep, I touched the herdsman's broken arm with the claw. There was a destrier picketed not far from the house, and riding him I was able to catch another for Dorcas and Jolenta. As I led it back, I noticed the sod walls had turned green overnight.